All right, remember, the machine knows if you're lying. First statement, Carvana will give you a real offer on your car all online.
False.
True, actually. You can sell your car in minutes.
False? That's gotta be...
True again. Carvana will pick up your car from your door, or you can drop it off at one of their car vending machines.
Sounds too good to be true, so true.
Finally caught on. Nice job. Honesty isn't just their policy, it's their entire model. Sell your car today, too.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
This podcast is supported by The Real Real. You know what I love most about the holidays? Giving gifts. But not just any gifts. Real gifts. Thoughtful gifts. Oh my God, how did you know gifts? That's why I love gift shopping with The Real Real. The Real Real is the most trusted name in authenticated luxury resale. And it's a holiday shopping secret I'm going to let you in on. Whether it's a surprisingly affordable, pristine condition bag for your BFF, a vintage find that's cool enough for the Gen Zer in your life, or even something your impossible to shop for dad will love. Get used to saying, I found it on The Real Real. Seriously, with over 10,000 new arrivals dropping every day from brands like Gucci, Fendi, Prada, Louis Vuitton, Tiffany & Co., and Cartier, there's guaranteed to be something for everyone on your list. Oh, and did I mention everything's up to 90% off retail? Get $25 off your first purchase at TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com to get your $25 off. TheRealReal.com.
Welcome back to Solo Spotlight, everybody. Today, we have one of our biggest guests to date, a guy some call the Alberta Rattlesnake, host of the Uncle Hack podcast, stand-up comic touring around the country, and one-third of the notorious Danger Cats trio alongside Sam Walker and Brett Forte. You might know him for his blue-collar, non-apology styles that built him a cult following, some call, you know, other words, or maybe you don't like him. Who knows? In Canada today, we have a lot of divisiveness. So, we're going to go right back to the beginning, talk about where it all began and where you're at now. Welcome, Uncle Hack, to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, man. To start off, I love what you're doing. I love your comedy. I've been watching your podcast all the time. I'm almost envious of the fact that you're able to do the solo ones. The solo ones I find are like the hardest things to do.
Yeah.
So, I can't wait to learn a little bit about that and maybe get some tips and tricks. When this comes out, it's going to be the end of September. You got some tour dates coming up in BC. Fernie,
yeah.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Fernie, BC, Castlegar, Cambridge, Ontario, Toronto, Albuquerque, New Mexico, and then coming back to Alberta 17th, 18th, 19th. If you're looking to check them out, visit their website, Danger Cats. Danger Cats 69 or Danger Cats?
DangerCatsShop.com.
Danger Cats Shop.
Yeah.
You can catch him on social media. And what's your social media handle?
Uncle Hack 69.
Uncle Hack 69 for all Uncle Hat and Hack and Danger Cats merch and tour dates. Be sure to check them out. Let's get right into it.
All right. Yeah, let's do it.
I want to know where you found this picture of a chick with shit in her mouth.
That is a Jason Rouse original.
Yeah.
So Jason, that is his, I'm on tour with him right now, but that is something that he enjoys sending to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just one of those response pictures that if you say something stupid, he's going to more than likely send that to you.
Mm-hmm. It's good shit to have those guys that have good stuff.
Totally.
So where did this all begin? Where did Uncle Hack start?
The origins of this all begin from boredom working in the oil patch.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it began. I at the time was fighting. I was in mixed martial arts for a while, and I was helping one of my friends train for their first professional fight, and I got injured. So I couldn't train no more. At the time, I had this hockey brand that I was trying to find new ways to market and just began making content online. And I noticed like there was something online where there wasn't like there was like a gap that wasn't being filled with like oil patch type style videos. Like I was searching for it just for something to watch. And then I was like bored and I was like, well, just create it yourself. And I would just take like talking points of my coworkers and colleagues and just like write them down and eventually just make up my own bullshit off of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it started there in about 20, I want to say late 2017, early 2018 is when it really caught some steam. Because I'd moved away from my hometown, Taber, Alberta. So I'm away from my friends and I was just trying to find ways
to fuck all to do.
Yeah. And like I was using like Facebook just to create shit and then put it on Facebook just to make these guys laugh, you know, because that's like what we would do in person anyways. It's just find different ways to make us laugh. So I was just making these dumb videos and putting it on there just to get a crack out of these guys.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally it just like turned into what it is today is just.
Yeah. Just hammering away.
Yeah. Reps. Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting, because do you think you've always had that, like the wittiness? Like, do you think that was some, like, because some people, they're not fast on their feet.
Yeah, probably. Like, when we were younger, we were really influenced by, like, CKY and Jackass and all that. So, I can't remember the year, but my mom bought me a camcorder for Christmas because I kept taking hers and going, and we'd film, like, skate. I was really into skateboarding. And you know, just all the crazy antics that they would get up to, we would film our own shit. And I was the guy that always had the camcorder, or one of us had like a digital camera back in the day that you could record video on.
Mm-hmm.
So we were always filming like skateboarding or doing dumb shit. Like the friends that didn't really skate that well, like they'd have one. We'd just find ways to like incorporate them in our dumb videos.
Right.
So it was like, we never really shot sketches, but it was more like physical harm to one another. Like,
right. Like pain Olympics.
Yeah, that type of shit. Pushing each other in shopping carts into like curbs.
Oh, fuck
and,
yeah.
And like,
oh,
yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Because I was in a town of like 7,000 people. Plus, like, there was other, you know, it's like redneck shit. You got to make your own fun at times because there's only, you know.
There's one convenience store, one gas station.
Essentially, yeah. So, yeah. Like, we would just find our own ways to entertain ourselves. And that was, like, tying an old car hood to the back of a pickup and, like,
dragging it along.
Yeah, in the snow and then filming it. Or, you know, you're at a house party and it's like, hey, I dare you to do this. And be like, don't do that yet. Yeah. I got my camera.
I gotta get the camera.
Yeah. So
that's interesting.
We were always filming stuff. And then as you get older, you know, like, you kind of stop, or I guess technology evolved too, where we could just film it off of our phones and we were doing stupid shit, but it would only circulate in the friend groups.
Right.
And then, I guess in like, when I did start, like the Danger Cats nonsense. And then it was like, hey, it'd be funny to like post all the stupid shit that we did as friends on this page. And then all of a sudden people were just being like, yo, it started like pretty much Taber centric and then expanded to like Lethbridge, Red Deer, and then it gained some steam and people were like sending their videos in and being like, this is funny as shit. And it was funny.
That's crazy.
So
was there a specific piece of content that you know that like gave you validation?
Yeah, it was like the third video with Danger Cats that went viral, and it was the rules of the patch. And that was just me. I went and bought a GoPro and I'm learning like editing skills on the fly. And I just turned a camera on and was talking to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then just, I would just chop whatever excess bullshit out.
Right.
And it was like, it was unscripted. It was just me being an idiot.
Right.
Talking about like these kind of unwritten rules that everybody knows but doesn't say out loud, you know.
Right.
they exist, but like,
and it's almost like playing into it as well.
Yeah,
like it wasn't like this like bad, like some people it's more of like I'm being a whistleblower or something, where you were more like, it's fucking funny.
Yeah, that's all it was. It's like a lot of people just found humor, seeing the humor in it, and it was like, it was just funny.
Yeah.
And then that caught like a lot of steam, and then that's where I think like it became very black and white, whether you like me or not, with the content that I was making.
Mm-hmm.
Cause it's like, It was a bit scary in the beginning, but then you get used to it. Like I know we were talking off camera about like people in the comments sections and stuff and saying that, and like I was getting like death threats from like day one.
Right.
So it was like, I was worried for about a month until nothing happened.
And then you're just like,
yeah. And I've been doing this now for almost 8 years, 9 years. And even like the transition from more like online to on stage. And you know what? I've had 3 bad interactions over
and
almost
a decade.
Were those
at like shows or just like in public?
In public.
Right.
One dude tried fighting me. And then like once I was just like, look, man, I don't want to. And he kept pushing me and pushing me. And then finally I was like, all right, fine.
Yeah.
Fine. You're not going to quit. Let's just
fight. Let's just fight.
And then that's when his tone changed and be like, I was just fucking. Yeah. And then, and like, that was one. I got approached in the grocery store one time.
You're like, just, can I just get my fucking groceries, man?
Yeah. I get it. Like, I guess, like, the things that I do can strike a chord and you wait for those moments to come up to, like, approach me and say your piece. Mm-hmm. And that's fair. I'll hear you out. I don't want to escalate to violence. Like, I'm not interested in that. I'm getting to the age where I'm like too old to be fighting in public.
Well, and the thing is, it's not like you have some people, and it's really interesting because you have some people that it's like, it's just like, don't you have something fucking better to do?
Well, like, that's like, I noticed like we're like fiends for our phones now. Yeah. And like, we take the internet like too
verbatim.
It's too serious now. Like, I don't know if you recall, but like when I first got on the internet, it was just stupidity.
It was just anarchy.
Yeah, it was me.
E-bombs world.
Facebook was like uploading your drunk photos from the past weekend, or you were just waiting for the dude's girlfriend who had the digital camera to upload the photos so you can finally update your Facebook profile.
Exactly.
That's all it was. And that was like evolved into this just demonic world where we're all supposed to just destroy one another.
Well, and I was even talking to my friends. We had an episode and we were talking about like TV shows that do, because one guy, he was a comedian and he was talking about the NBA All-Star game. And he was like, we should do whites on blacks. And he was like, he's like mixed. They can choose either one. And he was like, Jason Kidd would be one coach and you'd have like Ime Udoka or something. Anyway, and we kind of got into it back and forth and I was like, do you guys not recall the show MXC, where they literally stole like a Chinese game show and then dubbed the audio?
Do you remember Brock in 99?
No.
You don't remember that?
No. Or like, Robot Chicken? Like
Brock and I, this is like Alberta.
Okay.
It's Alberta legend. But Brock in 99 was a faux radio station done on a reservation.
Mm-hmm.
And a white guy recorded it. They haven't proved it, but everybody knows who it was.
Right.
You know? And that was like another piece of divisive content back in the day. And that was, it went viral because people were re-recording the tape on another tape and then handing it to another buddy. So then it just spread like wildfire. You can get it on the internet, obviously.
That's crazy.
Now, but that was like, for me, that was like the first like organic viral piece of content.
Yeah.
In a physical copy.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah. And people are so easy to just like, the switch just gets flicked so easy for people.
Yeah.
Where they're like, and you're like, man, it's one of those things where you're like, are we just like complaining to complain? Like, is this just like a thing where we're getting some dopamine spike?
It is. Yeah. It's exactly what it is. I mean, we look at last week.
Yeah.
That was a very crucial moment in culture, I think.
Right.
Of Charlie Kirk getting being murdered.
Yeah.
And look at how many people, I think we're so sick now. Like, look how many people ran online. The moment, like, we're talking moments after the bullet hit that guy, making videos being like, good, great, the Nazi's dead.
It's crazy.
That's insane.
Yeah.
We watched a murder. The whole world witnessed a murder. You would never see a murder in 1998.
No.
You would never catch one, right?
And the fact that they would talk about it like so freely, and then people are getting fired from their jobs thinking that fucking Office Depot doesn't give a shit about their reputation. You kind of got into comedy at a time where it was like, I don't know, you can tell me if I'm wrong or not, but was it easier in that time to like have this type of comedy? Like, do you feel like now that you're established, it's a lot easier? But if someone was trying to do like this type of comedy or like tackle certain topics like this, do you think like they'd just get like bodied?
Well, I have to be like, I have to be more self-aware of what I came in with. Keep in mind, many comics who start, come into this, they have no following.
Mm-hmm.
Do they or do they not have a comedic background? Are they funny in their peer group? I don't know.
Yeah,
I
can't are they speak... funny in general?
Yeah, I can only really speak for myself. And I right. came into this with a pretty decent following, a very large following compared to, you know, most of the comics in Canada. And it's a blessing and a curse.
So what was your following like when you originally got into comedy?
I had probably 40,000 followers on right. Instagram, and a Facebook page that has like 150,000
right.
YouTube and viral clips. So it was I was kind of established in the internet aspect,
mm-hmm.
especially locally. Now that doesn't you mean like in America or anything like that. Again, it's like more Canada, like
Canada, Alberta yeah. specific.
So there is, you know, you do. I was getting recognized in public at that time, and then on top of it, you know, going to an open mic, and I didn't want to be one of those guys that just showed up and started flexing my dick.
Yeah,
and being like, "Well, I have this."
Yeah, look at my followers.
Yeah, because it's two totally different things. You mm-hmm. know, stand up opposed to creating.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. November is Men's Health Awareness Month, so Talkspace wants guys to know that being prepared for life's biggest challenges and opportunities means prioritizing mental health, too. Talkspace can help you go beyond fine-tuned workouts, supplements, and productivity hacks. Talkspace can help you fine-tune your inner life so you can succeed in being the best version of yourself in any situation. And with Talkspace, you can get therapy from anywhere and on your time. You can even text your therapist between sessions. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace takes most insurance, and most insured members have a $0 copay. Men's Health Awareness Month is the perfect time to reach out to Talkspace. Now, get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com and save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com. That's Talkspace.com, promo code SPACE80.
Comedy or creating content online. So I was going by my real name and trying to, you know, I didn't wear any merch or anything like that. I was basically trying to mask myself
mm-hmm.
until I could figure out everything involved in it, and kept quiet. And then gradually got a little bit better to the point where I'm like, okay, maybe... We'll try and do some shows here or something like that. And then it gradually took off from there. But to answer your question about doing the type of humor that I do, to start with that, I think there's a lot of different factors. Is when you come into something and you have a following, you naturally just get respect from people inside the community. If not, they may or may not fear you because you can put them on blast, or they respect you because there's a possibility that you have something to offer them in the future,
mm-hmm.
or you're just, you know, they like you because, you know,
you just have a little bit of leverage going in.
Yes, exactly. Because then, like, if they said some bullshit to you, you can use that against them and be like, this guy's a piece of shit, blah, blah, blah.
Boom, and then
the whole
just...
world comes down on them.
Yeah.
Which I would never do, but I get that fear. So there's that. And then on top of it, I guess there's the detriment of like being known, of like, if I was greedy right out of the gate, I would say like, oh, I got into stand-up, come and see me. And then mm-hmm. do that and make a quick buck. And then what?
Yeah.
Then it doesn't.
You're not like actually yeah. giving that type of quality to your audience, especially
no.
if you've built up a following. There's probably a risk too, that you're going to kind of like, it's just a house of cards where, oh, if I do this and I do it in like a chintzy way or something, it's like, oh, if I don't perform, then like now I start to like drop off. And even looking at it now, it's like if you even say you come out and you're like, you know what? They were right. Like, it's all fucking too much, blah, blah, blah. People would be like, well, now the mystique is worn off. Like, you're supposed to be our champion. Like, you're supposed to be the guy that has the nuts of steel and this and that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, so now fucking we turn around and it's like, well, I don't see it the same way, right? So it's like this hard battle of like every decision might be like a fucking make it or break it. And as long as it's, you know, mm-hmm. I always just trust gut feeling, right? Like, if I feel I'm doing something gross, I'm probably doing something gross.
Yeah. And dude, most people, it doesn't...
It's a shock factor.
Yeah.
They want you to react, they're rage baiting.
And it doesn't work.
No.
You know, I was just in Vancouver on the weekend and I noticed this about them, is that a lot of them, they use these talking points almost to like try and agitate you to then present them as like superior in a moral sense. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's always like, they'll try and they use these degrading statements like all men
buzzwords.
Yeah, all men are trash. And then it's like, well, all men are trash. Okay, yeah, I'll agree. I'm a scumbag.
Right.
I'm a scumbag. At the end of the day, I thrive on chaos. I, you know, even in my personal life, I'm making mistakes that shouldn't, you know, I shouldn't at my age, but I'm still doing that. Mm-hmm. I'll admit I'm a scumbag, but all men, like, come on.
It's like, and be then, real.
Yeah. And then it's like, you tell a joke and be like, that racist joke. No, it was just a joke.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a fucking joke.
Yeah.
I'm sitting here like, I'm conversing with you. If I was that racist, you know, I wouldn't talk to a black guy. I wouldn't talk to an Indian guy.
Yeah.
This is all just me fucking around at the end of the day.
Yeah.
This is what I do. And you can do it back to me. Mm-hmm. I'll play with you.
Yeah.
But if you, the moment that you want to plant the flag, you know, I'm out. What are we doing here?
I remember we were on a family vacation and like, I have like no really religious background, but one of Emily's family members just kept calling me Jew boy. And
Jew boy?
And then I was like, yo, like, I'm not even Jew. But like, it was just so funny because I like played into it. But then as soon as I played into it, everybody's like, ugh. And you're like, what? You fucking started it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just following your lead. Like, I don't care. Like, I don't care whatever you call me. But it's really interesting because it's like people try to do that shit, but then like you go into it. Or like one thing where someone I know, they were like, oh, I'm going to have a party if Trudeau dies. And then one chick freaked out. And then the week later, she's like, oh, I hope Donald Trump gets shot. And then it's like, dude, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
Like, you're literally doing the same shit. Just fucking.
Enough already.
Yeah.
It's over. It's done. It's played out. Yeah. Nobody cares. You know, we've seen now time and time again, even when these political movements rise up, like, I don't know how online you are, mm-hmm. but out in Toronto, like the Canada First rally that took place. And then it's like surrounded by these other people that are screaming, these guys are Nazis, these guys are anti-fascist. And it's like the typical buzzwords. But it's interesting to me that you find the some videos that float around where they're like quizzing them. Why do you think like that? And they can't generate a thought behind why they're yelling that.
Yeah,
at
they
somebody.
Just go, I just don't like it.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, that's not really.
And look, I'm cool with you saying those things. I'm cool with it. Yell it, scream it, whatever. But like, at the same time, if you're going to make a statement, then at least have a follow-up mm-hmm. like synopsis or at least a detailed reason why you think like that,
mm-hmm.
or at least know the definition of fascism
mm-hmm.
before,
yeah,
you know,
100%.
At bare minimum, entertain me by knowing the definition of fascism when you're going to yell it at somebody, or Nazism. Hell, even fucking far right. Describe what far right is.
Right.
You know, and that goes for the other side as well. If you're going to call someone a communist, at least know why you're calling them a communist. Yeah.
Do you think that's like, especially in comedy today, do you think, because I was just watching what's his name? Big Italian dude, doesn't wear a shirt.
Bert Kreischer?
No, Halkus.
Oh, Stavros.
Stavros.
And Greek.
Greek. And he was interviewing this chick. And she was just going on about
I know the clip.
Trans and this and that. And he's like, oh, you're going to be perfect for Joe Rogan, talking all this like anti-woke and like
Just be funny.
Yeah.
How hard is it just to be fucking funny?
Yeah. It's so, like, it's just at this point now, it's just, like, played into.
Yeah. Well, comedy has gotten so big now that you're looking to comedians to be, like, the moral compass of our time.
Yeah.
Which is so strange because most of these people sleep in cars.
Well, you even said about the chick that was publicizing the article, this journalist. You're like, why are you caring about anything that a dude named Uncle Hat and his group Danger Cats?
Yes.
Like,
well, this is what they say. They say it's irony poisoning.
Right.
So what I'm doing. Then like, because I'm going so extreme, it like makes it okay.
You're validating and people go, look, he's talking about it. But it's like it's a different avenue.
Yeah.
Like it's a totally different avenue.
No, it says like Magoobie's Chuckle Hut behind me.
Yeah.
Or if they'll let me play their venues. You know what I mean? Nothing against Magoobie's Chuckle Hut. It was just the first comic.
Yeah. But it is really interesting. But now when you like contrast that to when you start, do you find that like the audiences in Canada, do you find that they like kind of like swayed into that?
It depends. It's show to show, you know. I get what you mean because like a lot of
like you go to like BC and you go and you're like, man, like there's a lot of people that are just like scoffing rather than laughing, or like you're getting and what, like when you're trying to test out your jokes, like what type of reaction? Obviously you're looking for like laughs, obviously, but it's like when you know like a joke's really gonna test the waters, is it when you get that gasp or like when you feel like, uh-oh?
It's just like trying to figure out how to make it funny.
Because
I got the things that I laugh at are I don't know.
I send the craziest shit to people and they write back and they're like, I'm sorry?
Yeah. Well, it's, I don't know. But then you just to try and take something that you find funny and make it resonate with like the everyday human being, mm-hmm. you know, because our lives are
let
all
alone
different.
A huge group of people.
Yeah. And for them to collectively laugh at something that you find funny it's a difficult task, especially like, I know there's always this argument is like, it's hard to write a clean joke. It's hard to write a dirty joke. It's just hard to write a joke, period. You know, like disregard everything, the political turmoil that we are in, and the, you know, you take into all the factors of how we are as a society. You as a human decided to buy a ticket to come to somewhere that says comedy behind that individual. Just shut that shit off for a second and just listen to what they have to say, because there is intent for laughter.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how bad the joke is or how poorly written it is, whether you're at an open mic or a professional show, it could be the greatest joke you've ever heard of all time or the worst joke. This person is up there trying to incite laughter.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether or not they missed the mark, that's just the risk that they took.
Yeah.
You know, like it's just the risk that they took, whether it's a clean joke or a dirty joke, they're still going there with the intent to incite laughter in a room.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that it's insane to sit back and be like, why, to tell these people that are comics, you're like, you got to have a moral compass. A lot of people look up to you.
It's like, you mean not tell jokes.
Yeah. Moral compass? What are we talking about?
Yeah.
10 minutes ago, before you started interviewing me, I was telling the whole crowd that I swallow my own cum.
Yeah.
You're going to take what I say and say seriously?
Yeah, moron.
I'm a retard. I should be treated as such. I should be institutionalized.
There was one picture I sent to a person, and it was like a person with a bunch of bleach stains, and it was like when Elton John farts on someone. And it was just like, and people are like, oh, you're like, it's funny. Whatever.
It is. Just
like, whatever.
Relax.
When you look at your development as a comedian, I'll start here. When you look at like your learning curve as a comedian, like you're doing these skits and everything like that, like where do you see like your building blocks? Like how long did it take you for you to really say to yourself, like, okay, I think I can do this?
There was a moment like I kind of leaned into. So there's kind of, if I can break it down into like three parts. In the beginning, it was a lot of fun. It was exciting because you're getting attention, a lot of attention. And so it's new, you know, and then you're trying to find ways to like keep that attention. And it kind of psychologically, it messes you up, I think, a little bit, because now you're getting opinions from fucking the whole country at times, right? And I think you chased something there, and that's where I lost a bit of myself. I was leaning a little bit too much into the character I was trying to portray, and a lot of you know, the indulgences, or the indulging in kind of the,
like, the method acting almost.
And like, you know, you get into the partying and all that, and you're promoting this like very devious and hedonist lifestyle with like alcohol, women, drugs, strippers, fucking sex, drugs, rock and roll.
Yeah.
And it kind of consumed me a little bit, and I felt lost. So then I made a decision in 2019 that like it's time to like cut all that out,
right,
and get to the grassroots of things. And that's when, you know, I took time, took the summer, I started writing, and 2020 began, started doing, or I guess right before lockdowns, I did my first open mic, and then the whole world shut down. So it was just like I had cleaned up my closet finally, straightened myself out.
Dipped your toe in the water.
And yeah, and I found this thing. So then it was like I was chasing it, and then from like 2021 onward was like full blown everything comedy. I don't you know, stay away from all the other shit.
Yeah.
Don't really drink anymore or any of that, you know. Nothing against people that do. I just know myself too well that I go down and like I'll fuck it. I want to go hard.
Mm-hmm. And you have to be like almost like focused.
Yeah.
Like, do you find that played like on the other side of it? Do you find that played a role in the way that you like frame things or the way that you see things? Like, getting out of that, did you find that like, in essence, like you took things more seriously, but then you had to still play into this Uncle Hack role?
Not really.
No,
no, I do what I want, mm-hmm, in terms of, finding what's funny,
mm-hmm,
and same with the content. Like I stopped giving a fuck about views, mm-hmm, and more so doing what I want to do. And no matter how many times I hear, oh, it was way better when you're doing like the oil patch and the hockey shit, and it's like, I don't want to do that anymore. Mm-hmm. It's played out. It's done. Go on TikTok. There's 19,000 fucking hockey creators. Find the one that you like.
Yeah.
Simple as that. I'm more in like my interest in like professional sports kind of dwindled a little bit. Yeah, I still watch hockey. I like it. But just my interest is has
so what kind of like lived in experiences do you have now that like inform your comedy?
I think it's just what are the major talking points? I enjoy, like, I've always enjoyed, I was like, right when I was beginning, right, I was kind of getting a little more politically involved.
This podcast is supported by The Real Real. You know what I love most about the holidays? Giving gifts. But not just any gifts. Real gifts. Thoughtful gifts. Oh my God, how did you know gifts? That's why I love gift shopping with The Real Real. The Real Real is the most trusted name in authenticated luxury resale. And it's a holiday shopping secret I'm going to let you in on. Whether it's a surprisingly affordable, pristine condition bag for your BFF, a vintage find that's cool enough for the Gen Zer in your life, or even something your impossible to shop for dad will love. Get used to saying, I found it on The Real Real. Seriously, with over 10,000 new arrivals dropping every day from brands like Gucci, Fendi, Prada, Louis Vuitton, Tiffany & Co., and Cartier, there's guaranteed to be something for everyone on your list. Oh, and did I mention everything's up to 90% off retail? Get $25 off your first purchase at TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com to get your $25 off. TheRealReal.com.
And, mm-hmm, and seeing the conversation that was taking place. And then, so, and then I was still, you know, watching a lot of hockey. And then as time moves on, you know, politics influences our life more than McDavid getting a hat trick.
And
you know?
People do so much stupid shit in politics.
Yeah.
It's almost like, I'm like, where has this been my whole life? Like, these guys are fucking idiots. Like,
yeah,
these guys are crazy stupid.
Well, when you peel the curtain back a little bit and you get away from just watching House of Commons clips and you see them when they have to improvise on the street, you realize like Most of these people are jackasses.
Yeah.
And we
yeah.
pay them a lot of fucking money to be jackasses.
Yeah.
And it's annoying.
Yeah.
And I find that annoying. Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's once you hear somebody go, Mr. Speaker, you're like, fuck me.
Well, and then he's getting the names wrong and the billions and adding zeros. And you're like, dude, this is all you had to do for 9 months was fucking prepare for your set, dude.
Yeah.
And now you got
you
got fucking Joe Blowy here.
Yeah.
Fucking telling you, no, it's fucking 9 billion and we're not releasing it for another month. And you're like,
and all the pandering that they do on both sides. Like, it's yeah. tough to watch. Like, I'm even critical of Pierre.
Yeah.
Because you listen to him and he
sounds like a villain.
Yeah. Like he'll go, he wins his riding out in Alberta, right? Yeah. With the by-election. Then it's immediately after he wins that, he goes out to Surrey and he's like, we're going to talk about immigration and all that. And it's like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Where was this before?
Yeah.
You know, not that like.
Yeah, and it's interesting. It's like they hate you until they don't. They like you until they don't. It's like all of a sudden, like, Carney did a bad job during the, like, speaking today. And then they're like, oh, Pierre, fuck. And then it's like, dude, you guys just hated him yesterday.
Yes.
And now all of a sudden, this guy's the dick? It's every day you're like, who's the asshole?
Yes.
And, like, donkey of the day. And it's just, it's crazy because it's so intertwined with, like, life where you have to be able to make jokes about it, and then people can't find, like, everybody's just always in crisis mode.
Because they're miserable.
Yeah.
That's why.
Yeah.
If I was miserable, I'd be sitting here, like, projecting all my insecurities in a way that would be somebody else's problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when in reality, if you looked around and it, ask yourself this, somebody who's constantly in comment sections, like trying to make points, would you trade lives with them?
No,
you wouldn't, because no. they're it's just like, you don't, other people are doing other shit with their time than sitting on Facebook and yeah. being like, this guy is
yeah, it's so strange to me. But being in like the stand-up like world and like developing yourself, it's interesting to talk about too, like establishing like the group of Danger Cats and how that kind of all came to be. Were you guys all established comedian or like established in this scene beforehand, or were you guys friends outside of this?
Well, it started, so Brett and Sam had been doing comedy for about 5 years by the time I had met them.
Okay.
And they're both based out of Calgary. I had seen, like, you know, we were locked down. I like stand up. I've always enjoyed roast battles, and I was looking for like roast battle content.
Mm-hmm.
And then I stumbled across like what those two were doing in Calgary, and I found it interesting. And then during that time, it was just Canadian comics that were touring around and doing the clubs. So Brett was performing at the Comic Strip, so I'd went there, watched him. That was the first time I had seen him live, and I think that would have been about early 2020
mm-hmm.
is when that would have been. When the fuck was it? Now, it would have been in lockdown, because I recall like this fucking, hey, 6 feet away.
Mm,
right. 6 feet away.
Yeah, everybody's wearing fucking fish tanks on their head.
Yeah, like, yeah, it was that timeline. Yeah. I remember that. And then I went and seen him live, and then after, I was like, hey, man, that was a lot of fun. Would you like to come and do my podcast sometime? I've always, like, you know, it's relatively decent to come in, have a conversation, and bon nuit.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, later down the road, he was performing at Yuck Yucks, I think like 6 months later. So we did the podcast, and that kind of was like the first we had met one another.
Mm-hmm.
And then down the road, Jason Rouse was the one that kind of pushed that further to be like, hey, you guys are going to work together. You're going to need one another. There's going to be shit storms that come, and you three as a trifecta are going to be, well, you know, like, this guy's got the following, you guys got the stand up. It's like meshed mm-hmm. together. We took it on the road, and then those guys helped me like develop as a comic. They were just like, you know,
kind of like mentored you a bit.
Yeah, totally. They would just, they'd be hypercritical of like what was going on and what I was doing to make sure, like, you know, you're not, getting bad habits, and it's
right.
And that was super helpful. And now 5 years later, we've been touring all over. You know, we all of us got our visas to go down and work in the States.
Okay.
And yeah, we just continue doing what we're doing. You know, sometimes we branch out, we do our own thing, or we'll come to back together for bigger shows.
Mm-hmm. So what's the pipeline for like getting gigs as a comic? Like once you get established, is it you reaching out and being like, hey, like we're this comedy trio, blah, 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 blah. Like you want to have us? Or is it more of like, these guys are like, oh, you fucking rock, come out here and we're going to sell all these tickets and fucking.
It's opposite of that.
Well, and especially in the situation you guys are in, probably not a lot of people reaching out.
The unfortunate part is the perception of us is that we are these like outlandish, like extreme political fucking like that's the narrative that was painted in the media. So when you go to reach out to new places, the first thing that some of them see is that,
mm-hmm.
or they know of you and they're like, not a fucking chance, mm-hmm. you know, without even giving us an opportunity, you know?
Right.
And in the comedy world, like you were asking earlier, fuck, I got like a mustache hair and I know it's driving me nuts. You know, with Canadian comedy, it seems like, yeah, like, and we're taking risks by kind of going outside of like what the typical industry route mm-hmm. would be and trying to do our own thing. So that kind of that you can might as well scratch off doing any of the big festivals here. Most of the clubs don't want anything to do with you because, mm-hmm. you know, you're controversial. And a lot of these people have never dealt with controversy at a magnitude that we may bring.
Right.
You know, not saying that it happens all the time, but if it does so happen to occur, then a lot of them don't know how to go through it. When
yeah,
in reality,
they just trip out.
Yeah. Like in some cases, it's like very few emails and they're like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And it's like, dude, just ignore them. None of these people are coming to the show. They're not going to do anything. Yeah. This is just intimidation tactics to try and make you scared that we're coming there. Mm-hmm. When in reality, nothing's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know? So by doing that and like the type of humor that we have, and then on top of it, the controversy that surrounds us, a lot of people, they're weary of it, I guess, mm-hmm. is the, you know, and instead of just like taking a risk, showing like, hey, we'll accept this type of humor, all types of humor, really,
because mm-hmm.
that's all it is.
It's interesting because it's like, is it really taking a risk or like, am I just having a different type of comedy on my stage? Like, the idea of telling jokes has gotten so divisive where it's like, so now who's the arbiter of truth of like, what's funny and what's not funny and like how people decide their craft. And now all of a sudden it's, you know, and a lot of people, it's like, okay, so you make a fucking t-shirt. Now all of a sudden your jokes suck. It's like, that doesn't fucking make sense.
Yeah.
You know, like that's where I start to get lost where it's like, you know, like, It baffles me. And then these people don't even, like, they don't even go to the shows. So it's like, now you're just taking it. Now it's like played banana phone for seven different people through yeah. word of mouth. We don't like this guy? Okay, we don't like this guy. You don't like this guy? Okay, we don't like this guy.
There's been so many instances where there has been people that have came to our show that know what we're about, know what we do. They've been to a roast battle. That we've produced, and then after when that controversy took place, they switch up and being like, yeah, you guys, it's like you sat there through
fucking us off.
Yeah. And then you sat there through the whole show. You didn't say jack shit. In fact, you came up and shook my hand and said, that was great. It's nice to see somebody taking risks. And yeah. now online, you're some sort of like warrior beating its chest, being like, look how morally just I am by yeah. making a comment about these guys.
Do you think that something like Kill Tony could ever exist here? Or do they have something like that? But do you think it's too like fucking like shitting on people? Like in Canada, like I don't think that, I think the idea... Like, do I think the hosts do a great job? Like, I think they're at the point now where, like, they're at such a fucking, they're on their fucking yeah. throne now where it's like, you know what I mean? Like, nothing's funny to them because they're the fucking crazy funny people. But like, the idea, if you took it gracefully, but like, do you think the idea that like people are being criticized by like a panel of comics and like,
There was that in Toronto.
Yeah.
Dan Guiry ran a room called the Danger Room back in the day at the Corner Comedy Club, and comics would go up, and then him and I can't think of the other guy's name. It's going to bother me. Morgan O'Shea. Him and Morgan O'Shea would just carve these fucking people to pieces.
Mm-hmm.
None of it's recorded or anything, and I don't expect you to know the lore of Canadian comedy, especially in Toronto.
Right.
But yeah, it was taking place out there, and like newer comics that were trying to get stage time, and then these guys would just completely destroy their egos by being assholes, and it was fucking chef's kiss.
Yeah.
I got to be a part of they revived it and did one again last year, and I was a part of it, and it was awesome. Because you're watching, there is a lot of ego, and there's a lot of a lot of lack in self-awareness, where some of these idiots believe like they are the next fucking
George Carlin.
Yes. And so when
you're like, settle down, man.
And when you get like four morons that will just sit there and shred you to pieces, I guess it does destroy you, and it exposes a layer of yourself too.
Do you think that levels you up as a comic though, to be able to handle that? And then it builds like you're working on your feet, but wouldn't it be like almost a benefit?
Yes.
Like to be like, yo, because then you have the opportunity now. Well, now I just come back even harder.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what's going to define my success. If like, it's like having a fucking politician. Like I had a guy on and he's like, so when are we going to like go through the script? And you're like, the fuck are you talking about? Like a script? Like, no, dude.
Politicians
like,
said that?
Yeah. And I was like, dude, you're running for like fucking this, like, dude, if you don't know what the fuck you're doing, like, then I was like,
this is my exactly
right.
Where's the script? I can't think on my feet.
I said, if you're a good enough politician, you, and so I, with this podcast, I reached out to a bunch of different politicians and I was like, listen, before October 20th, I want to do like a round table, and here's how it's going to work. There's going to be four people. Every person has the ability to send in three prompts. You can throw in your best fucking layups that you can like just fucking, you can hit it.
Yeah.
But you have to answer the other nine fucking things. So then people were worried, well, this guy doesn't like me, so he's going to put in something about transit or fucking infill or whatever the fuck it is.
Who fucking who? And this is like, your job.
And you're like, well, isn't that the point of you being able to like figure out a way that works for everybody? But it's really interesting because like, I think a lot of people, they're just looking for the layups, man. They're looking for like, you know, even when you look at something like comedy where it's like, okay, are there certain comics that cherry pick where they want to go because they know that the audience or the people that run the shows are almost going to like kiss their ass and they're not really seeing any type of adversity? Where it's, yeah, what happened to you guys?
We went to every city that they didn't want us.
Right.
Every single one of them that they said, we don't want you here, we still went. We found a way to do the show.
Yeah, you guys like calling people in the middle of the night being like, hey, can we do a fucking show?
Yeah. There was times, man, where this is how crazy it got, is that I had to book three venues because I knew the first one is basically, that's a sacrificial lamb.
They're going to cancel.
They're going to fold. And then like you have two in the back pocket. The third one is like, if they get to that, then we're fucked. Then it's, but they never did, because it's like you just have to, you know, sort yourself out. And so you're playing like almost like war games in a way.
Yeah. Like, it's like, it's
silly.
Yeah, it is. And now when you look at that in terms of like the comedy scene in the US.
Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, no, it's the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Yeah. Do you find it, like, very different, or do you find there's, like, the same type of thing where people are gatekeeping and there's still that?
Oh, yeah. There's still that. It's just now you have... It's a bigger playground is all. Mm-hmm. The sandbox here is just so small that so many people are involved. Like, you got clubs owned by comics who don't want certain comics coming through. You have, you know, people in positions that can gatekeep who gets what. Mm-hmm. So they can stifle your career. Where, like, we're over here. We're not even in the sandbox. We're in our own little pirate ship. And mm-hmm. we'll do anything. We'll go anywhere. We'll make something happen. We'll make something out of nothing. And continue doing what we're doing, where that's like when you put your career trajectory in other people's hands, you're kind of like you're at the mercy of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's caused some envy of, you know, veteran comics or up and coming or even people that at the same stage as me, because they tried playing the game how it was presented to them when they began.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to a point in your career where you're looking at, like, why is this fucking retard
mm-hmm.
doing way better than me? I've been doing this for 12, 15, 20 years.
Yeah, this guy's making three times the money or something.
Three times the money. He has an audience. He has all this other shit. But they can sit there and piss and moan and all that. But it's like, yeah, you also, in your 12-year career, you've been doing these high-level festivals time and time again. I'm not even looked at to go to them.
Mm-hmm.
And even in showcases that would make sense, like a Dark and Dirty show, it would mm-hmm. make sense to have us three run the Dark and Dirty show because, like, that's like what we do.
Mm-hmm.
But we're bypassed on that, which is fine. I'm not gonna, you know, I imagine my tone comes across like I'm complaining about
no.
it. But in the same time, is like, they say that, but then meanwhile, they don't want to do the work that all this work that they don't see behind the scenes, the editing, the calling venues, the putting together our own tours, the even down to making our posters. Like, it's all done in-house. Mm-hmm. Everything's done in-house, from the producing of the show, the marketing of the show itself, and then sometimes even the fucking cleanup, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
So from top to bottom...
Do you find that, like, the fact that you guys are kind of, like, in essence, like, getting, like, fucking blackballed, do you find that, like, the behavior, like, you guys are taking more, like, not risky opportunities, but you guys are more, like, putting your necks on the line more often than not to get a show or... not in the way of it ruins your reputation, but, like, you guys are doing more... You guys are putting in more work that the average comedian is putting in because that's what it takes to get in the door.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? It does, man. And that's the difference is it is the work ethic that's all behind this. So if that didn't exist, it wouldn't work. It wouldn't exist.
Do you ever worry about burnout? Is that ever something that, like, you consider where you're like, oh, eventually the machine's going to get so big that we're just not going to get anything. And then our plate's just going to amount. Or is it just, yeah, we'll figure it out.
There's always a way.
Yeah.
You know, there's always a way. There's three of us. So, you know, you can pass off some work to other individuals. And, like, we can work together and make whatever happen, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So there's always that. With the burnout, of course, you're like, when you go hard, it was nice. We took the summer off. It was a little more relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
So it was good to, like, kick the feet up and now you're, like, right back into it. But that's just the name of the game, man. And, if you want to be into it, it's no different than any other job. There are pros and cons to it. It looks cool, right? You get to do something very cool and something that you're actually passionate about. So it's hard to sit here and bitch
mm-hmm.
when I'm doing what I want to do.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like I got what I asked for.
Yeah.
So, like, what's the... Now, how does that intertwine with podcasting? Because that's a whole nother avenue. And it's like, how do you manage that time in between, like, podcasting, finding... Now, you're bringing on guests every now and then. So it's probably easy scheduling-wise if you can just whip it up and do it.
Yeah.
But is that... something that's like its own enterprise, or is that something that's just like just almost a kickstand for the comedy career?
I think I get what you're saying is I would say that this is more so like the podcasting definitely helps with like riffing out ideas, and it's a way for me to talk about these things that I'm interested in or things that are happening, and maybe my perspective is different than somebody else's. I don't know.
Mm.
But it's just like, it's something fun that I like doing. And it's just a way to, I guess, promote, you know, I find enjoyment out of the things that I talk about at times. Sometimes I struggle to like get up and be like, fucking, oh, I got to record a podcast. And then I remind myself being like, listen, 5 years ago, you were getting, or I guess longer than that now, Jesus, 7 years ago, do you want to go back to the days where you're up at 6 a.m. going and doing something that you utterly despised?
Yeah.
You know, apart from the guys that you worked with, just this waking up to go and break your back over bullshit or work an hourly wage, or do you want to like work towards something that you've always wanted to do?
So right.
It's easy to justify.
But it does come with like a lot of like sacrifice, like,
yeah.
And that's the interesting part, because like how much does the drive and passion outweigh like long term things that the average person, like even I look at myself like working in a jail,
yeah.
Like there's so much like just stupid shit or whatever it is, shift work, working nights where you're like, okay, at 30, like, should I have had it fucking figured out? Like, and what the fuck am I doing here? Like, and I'm having all these problems that, like, the guy that was in finance at 20 fucking on his boat somewhere.
So?
You know?
And, I think that's just life.
Yeah. Man. I'm not worried about it. Like, there's times where I sit back and just go, like, man, like, the fuck's going on here? Like, but I guess it just outweighs how much you want to do it. Cause like, I never regret doing it. I never regret like having these opportunities. Where do you see like your evolution going? More touring, more like running shows? How does that look like for you?
Yeah. I just want a headline. I think it would be cool as hell to have a fan base large enough that I could fill B-level clubs across North America.
And what seating would that look like?
If you're doing four, no, fuck, come on. A
couple hundred?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like these rooms that have anywhere from 120 to 170.
Okay.
And, you know, you can go anywhere. That's still a good living. You're doing what you want. And you can, at the end of the day, go and do 4 or 5 shows in a weekend and come home with a few grand in your pocket. I think that's wonderful. You know, like, I don't necessarily chase, I think we all have like these, you know, I would love this particular item, but there's nothing off the top of my head. It's always like camera gear or something. Like
right. That. Yeah.
You know, like items and big houses and luxury cars don't do it for me, where
no.
It'd just be like, to be able to live my life and be comfortable enough and know like, oh, my tour schedule's filled up for the year and I'm not constantly having to do that, or just having a booking manager and being
shit
able
like
to,
that.
Yeah.
Just like a normal mid-range comic level.
Yeah. Where like, I don't know, being like Rogan famous or doing these massive theaters or arenas or anything like that. I don't know.
Guy can't even put his own album on his own club.
Yeah.
So it's like, where are we at? It's
The
guy's fucking getting shit on for putting his own fucking special on a wall.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like.
Yeah, I get that. But I guess it's, you know, I as long as I'm able to like work clubs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and just here, you're going here.
And you're like,
and then
perfect.
Like, I'm like, that to me would be so nice. And I'm like, not having to sit there and be like, oh, I focus on comedy. That's
right.
It. It's not
now you're doing everything.
Yeah. Like right. I do a lot of I would still do all my own editing and stuff like that, but I would have more time
booking and stuff.
Yeah. I would have way more time to just focus on the things that I'd want, because a marketing agency or a booking agency would be like, here's your posters, here's this. You just need to write jokes and go out and do your thing.
When you see this type of like controversy, have you seen it actually like affect, besides like getting shows canceled, but like when the show goes through, people are still showing up?
Yeah. Yeah.
And ultimately that's the goal, where it's interesting because is a lot of this almost like superficial, like where it's not really hitting anywhere that's like detrimental to my career. Like, to some degree, if you have to navigate around it, but it's if you do the proper like pivots and navigation, like it's not really, it is like cancel culture, like an actual thing.
I don't know. I think it's just, fucking glitter and shit is mm-hmm. all it is. You know, it does nothing. I'm not a guy that's supposed to break mainstream in Canada, and right. I found a way to do it. And to be honest, having the mainstream media write negatively about you is a good thing.
Yeah.
Nobody with a conscience looks at media or news outlets who then like shit on people and think like, oh, I must believe.
Yeah.
You know? And that's it helped us find our audience quicker. Mm-hmm. Because anybody who has distrust in the media are the same people that would enjoy my style of humor.
Yeah.
The crossover is huge. Mm-hmm. You know, those that like see that and be like, we're writing about comedians now.
Yeah. That's what we have to talk about.
Yes.
That's all we have to talk about.
When CBC writes an article and being like a comedian known for racist jokes, that's in the subtitle of one of them. And you laugh and be like, are you fucking serious yeah. right now?
It's like, come on.
Who's the comedian?
Yeah.
Uncle Hack?
Holy fuck.
This idiot calls himself Uncle Hack? And who's he with? Danger Cats? What the fuck is this? Who is writing this?
Yeah.
And then not one, but two articles. And you need to scratch your head. First off, this is your tax dollars at work.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, why the fuck did I waste 5 minutes of my life to read about some jackass who at one point was running around the countryside, hammered drunk with a mullet and a microphone in his fucking hand, being like, hey, we're at a mud bog this weekend. Hey, does your girlfriend want to show me your tits? You know, like that's the guy you're taking serious.
That's crazy.
A piss tank.
Yeah.
From 5 years ago. A piss tank. Gacked out on fucking nose rockets, being like, hey, we're going to the strip club, buddy, drooling out of the side of my mouth.
Oh.
That's who they took serious. You look like a fool.
Oh, 100%. And the fact that we're printing papers on this.
Yes.
Couple quick more questions before get you out of here. Do you have any experience that you would label as like your best night you had as a comic?
You know, it's tough to like nail down one, but one of my favorite is probably all the nights that I got to like open for Brian Holtzman, because he's just he's such an incredible comic. And such a kind soul and just a veteran of the game, and to have the opportunity of that and to tour Southern California with a guy that's respected to the caliber that he is just truly amazing. Of like seeing not only how talented he is and what he does, and if you get it and you don't like it, like the smoke clears and you can sit back and laugh at a guy like that. And for him to show you mutual respect of like almost viewing you as a bit of a bushwhacker for the show, of being like, okay, we're going to crack this shit open so it's easier for Brian, you know, and for him to like voice those types of things to you is truly like it's such an honor. And to work with a guy that, you know, has closed out the Comedy Store for fucking over 20 years. He's at a closer at Rogan's Club, and all the comics respect him and will like get up off their ass from a green room where they're having conversations with, you know, some of the top guys in the country to come and see him and watch what he does
mm-hmm.
is so cool.
Yeah.
It's so cool, man.
Yeah. It almost validates what you're doing, being like, if I can be on the same stage as this guy, I'm doing something right.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe it does. Maybe it doesn't. And yeah. I try not to think about that type of shit. But it's just cool to have an opportunity to be alongside someone like that.
100%.
And just to soak in all the knowledge that he's had over the years of mm-hmm. working at like the most prestigious place on the planet when it comes to comedy.
Do guys like that hand out a lot of gems? Like, do they kind of do a lot of teaching?
I think you learn from what they're doing, and they don't necessarily like come in, hey, you need to do this.
No, you can see like their mannerisms and stuff, and you're like, oh. Mm-hmm.
And he's such a student of the game that he'll like come back and he's watching you to see what you're doing. And then like, you know, like it's, mm-hmm. that's fucking insane to me. Yeah, it's like, I'm a 5-year guy, Brian. Yeah. But he's like, no, that's because you do things different than me. And maybe you find a way that to get I'm fucked up. This is him telling me this. He's like, I'm fucked up. When I make it bad, I like to make it worse for those people, where you guys find a way to get out of it.
Right.
He goes, I want to dig the hole deeper.
Right.
I want to make it fucking awful for everybody. If you're having an awful time, I want to make it worse. And he goes, I'm sick in the head, but you guys find ways. And then for him to like voice that is crazy, man. And you just like, you're in awe.
Yeah. You're like, what the fuck is happening right now?
Yeah. 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 It's just like the experiences you get to have are like pretty cool for talking and just writing your thoughts down. And you know, you go from praised in one area, and then you're hated in another, and it's total fucking wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And as a young wrestling fan, and you're watching this, and you're creating all this madness and this chaos, and people don't get it. They're fucking protest. Who protests comedy shows?
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean?
How many people are getting their shows protested in this country? It's fucking insane, dude.
Yeah.
It makes no sense, but it's like, in the same breath of air, it's like, that's how effective the jokes are.
Yeah.
Is that people are getting up off their ass to come see the show, and then they're painting signs to fucking protest the show.
And then you're saying, that just gives you, you guys are just giving me more fucking, you guys are just giving me more bits.
Yeah.
You guys are just helping me.
The show wasn't selling until you dickhead showed up.
And now we're here.
Now I'm packed. I got paid. I can pay my rent and fucking feed my fish.
Feed my fucking Cherokee. That's hilarious. What do you think with your experience now, what is some advice that you would have for people trying to get into the comedy game now that are trying to punch through?
I think that too many people sit back when they want to begin, and they try to, you know, be so perfect going into it, where I had to remove my ego. I had to remove, you know, everything that I had in a virtual world now needs to, you know, all my insecurities are going to be exposed, you know, like how confident I can be on the internet might not be the same way it's going to be on stage. So it's just like, I told myself, I'm not going to tell anybody. I told three of my closest friends, I said, hey, I'm going to go try stand up. If you guys want to come, you're the only three. Please do not tell anybody else, but I'm just telling you guys, this is going to be the first time I'm trying it. And I think it would be cool if you guys came and maybe seen, or, you know, you were there to experience it too. If not, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty fucking gay.
Mm-hmm.
But
did you go in overconfident, or were you like shitting bricks?
To be honest, I can't quite remember, but I do recall.
Just a haze.
Yeah, it was just like, I didn't know what to expect. I told myself not to have any expectations whatsoever when it comes to laughter, because it's like, sure, this shit makes your friends laugh, but your friends are already, they've already gave you the validation that they know you know or think you're funny.
Mm.
So now they could be completely full of shit, which they
just
were,
fluffing you,
because I bombed for 5 minutes. Yeah, no laughs whatsoever. All the material that I had, I flubbed it. You know, I didn't have the confidence that I have now. You don't have I found my stage presence, my voice, and it helped me get there quicker just from you know, having all this background online and being in front of a camera and putting shit out there. But then when you get a live audience, you're just kind of, you're changing a few things.
Yeah. It's like, it doesn't necessarily translate. Like, you know, there are things that translate in terms of like handling like the feedback and stuff. But then it's like, you get on there and the fucking light is hot as shit.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay.
Yeah. Or maybe that thought is just like, it's a crazy thought, but there's like, it's funny to you as a premise, but like to them, they're like,
you're just
what
up there
the
giggling to yourself.
Yeah.
That's what I do. I just start laughing at my own jokes, and then people be like, I think this guy's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
I think this guy's a little mental.
That's usually the case.
Yeah, he's a little bit of a mental. Yeah, that's amazing, man. I feel like I got so much out of this conversation. And honestly, like, they're, you know how you can have conversations that, like, exhaust your battery, fill your battery up?
Mm-hmm.
Like, these are conversations that I can have that, like, fill my battery up.
Yeah.
So it's always nice. It's refreshing to, like, hear these point of views and being able to, like, again, just you having the time to come on my show and fucking hang out and shoot the shit,
just
man.
Just do it, man. Everybody, I think that if you, you know, everybody's got their own passions. And you can watch it. Go walk around and look at the world, you know, and just see people that are empty and they're broken and they've lost, like, the joy that, you know, when you were a kid, you had dreams, you had fucking aspirations, you had big thoughts, right? And you see people that have completely abandoned that, and they've now just become almost a shell of themselves, and they've left all that joy that they once had behind them. And then if they, you do have a passion, chase it. Who gives a fuck where it ends up? You know, don't put expectations on it. You're living well, you know, you have food in your stomach, and you have like a side project. And if this becomes great and it becomes big, good, man.
It's not. And I always say, outside of like the cameras and YouTube and all that bullshit, it's like, it is like conversations that like influence like how people like live on their life. Like every conversation that I've had with people, it's one of those things where you can leave and you got like a little fucking 1% that you did a little better, or you doing something or, you know, like I have people on where like I come in and like automatically I'm like, this person's a fucking idiot. And like, I'm gonna fuck. And then they turn out to be like super cool, and like they fucking, you know, or some people you come on and then you're like, oh, maybe I should stop being such a fucking idiot or whatever it is, right? Like, there are things that you're able to learn through this, and like having like long firm discussions like this are a great way for people to like, you know,
totally,
for audiences to like understand people more. And, you know, again, I like maybe some people that fucking had their opinions change now, right? And like they can kind of see the authenticity behind it, and like there's no malice, or there's no like fucking, people are just trying to be fucking silly and enjoy shit, like you know, like nobody's trying to like, yeah, like it's not that deep. It's,
no,
you know what I mean, like it's not
pretty
that
surface level,
yeah,
if I'm being honest.
It's not that deep, people.
Yeah.
With that, that
well,
has been,
well, I'll say this, for 2 years, I had friends and family tell me what I was doing is like wrong, you know, and this is before even stand up or any of that. And then that I'm going to get fired from my job, that I'm going to lose all this shit. And it was just like, it was also advice from people that I didn't necessarily, I respect them because they're family and peers, but I didn't respect their opinion because they're not
doing it.
Well, they're not even in a position where I think that they're comfortable with themselves, or they're you know what I mean, like they're not in the, they're not comfortable in their own skin.
Yeah.
So I didn't think that the advice that they were giving at that time was valid, because it was it just seemed like they themselves are scared of risk, so they just didn't want to. I think they were, you know, kind of being more,
they were like worried for you.
Yeah, they're worried for failure, and they didn't want to see a loved one fall on their face trying something that, you know, is putting yourself out there. And if it fails, it fails.
And
man,
you have to almost tell them like,
yeah,
well, if it fails, just let me do, like, let me go out there, like take off the fucking training wheels.
Yeah.
And like, let's see how this goes. But some people are like, like you said, they're like a shell of themselves. They're like, I have so many friends that try to do shit, and I have to like straight up tell them, like, if you don't do this today, like, never bring this up to me again. Because I'm just not even going to allow you to,
I don't
like,
want to hear about it.
Yeah, I'm just not going to
let you do it. You can talk just, about it all
Yeah,
because
it's just like you bouncing these off, and I'm not going to like enable you to just like fucking meander about this. Like, when I started this with my friend, we were watching Ryan Garcia and Tank Davis, and I said, if we do not agree to do this now, I will never do anything with you. Like, I will never do like a hobby side project. Like, you decide now and we do it full tilt, or like never fucking bring this up to me again.
Yeah.
Cause I'm not going to waste my time. Right.
Yeah.
But I'm a fucking psychopath.
Totally.
And then they're just like, I just don't know why you'd want to have this guest on. Okay. Well, fucking, I don't know why you eat Burger King every day, but I don't fucking.
Oh, you were getting flack about me coming?
No. Just anybody. Oh, like, oh. I had a chick on, the biggest controversial girl I had on, well, girl, guy, I don't know, was Boobzilla, and she was like a circus chick. And and she like put fucking handcuffs on her fucking tits.
It's wild,
like,
hey?
Yeah.
Did you see her perform?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
And dude, I looked around the room, and I'd probably say it was like an 80-20 of like 20 people were amazed, 80 people were like disgusted.
Good.
And I was like, I got to have this chick on.
Yeah.
So like I was walking out and someone's like, you're so beautiful. Oh my God. And then she's like, my name's Amazing Boobzilla right away. I'm like, I got to have you on the show. And then she's like, sure. And dude, she came on, man. And like, this chick was bigger than life. Cause this is such a, like a nuanced thing that it's like, this is probably you and like two other people in the fucking world that are fucking handcuffing their tits to a fucking beer keg. Yeah. What the fuck is going on? I had a fucking super good time. She had a really amazing story about how like she was dealing with like a genetic disorder that of like gynecomastia. I'm probably getting it wrong, but it was like uncontrollable breast growth. So she has to go to the doctor every so years and get like her fucking tits chopped down. And she said that she was teased about it so much as a kid that she was like, well, if people are gonna like have me breaking watermelons at a fucking birthday party, like I might as well just do this shit.
Fuck yeah.
You know what I mean? And you're like, that's fucking amazing. And I was like, yes, like let's go.
Yeah.
Like, and it was great. But it's one of those things where you just say, like, if you were thinking what I'm thinking, you would have the same idea. Like some of the shit that she was talking about, and she was like calling her fucking like pediatric surgeon or whatever. She's like, and this guy's a pedophile. And you're like, you need to calm the fuck down. And she's just, and then we leave and she's talking about God and all this. And I'm like, all right, time to go.
Yeah. Get out of.
But she lives in fucking Vegas. What do you expect?
It's so, a performer, man.
But it honestly, like doing this is like such a, like such an honor to have these people on. Cause she even said like, they're like, nobody's even given me like the room to even tell people why. Like people just think I'm a freak. People just think, and I'm like, you are swinging your tits around. With
got fire extinguishers attached to your nipples. Yeah. I mean,
swinging around a fucking 40 pound beer can. I thought your breasts were going to rip off your body.
Yeah. You need some freak show shit going on. And I don't mean that disrespectfully at all.
And I thought it was amazing, dude. I was like, keep it coming, man. And then there was like a dude dressed up as a nun. And he was like grabbing dudes' dicks. And
yeah. Was this in Sherwood? Did you go see this?
This was in like Wem.
Oh,
this was like
Wem?
Outside like Wem. But they did do one in Sherwood
Park,
too.
Yeah, I went to the Sherwood Park one.
Dude, it's fun. Those are the type of people that you want to get on, man. And like, not only that, I also just have anybody. Like, this is a total open door policy. But yeah, man, I'm so happy to sit down and have this conversation, man. I think the audience is going to learn a lot. Or it was just fucking fugazi the whole fucking time. Who knows? But yeah, man. Where can people find you?
Anything Danger Cats related or Uncle Hack 69 on all social media platforms, and yeah, that's pretty much it. DangerCatsShop.com for any upcoming shows.
Yeah, October 17th, 18th, 19th, you're going to be back in Alberta. October 10th and 11th, you're going to be in Toronto. Make sure you check out his site for tickets, and go see the show.
Totally.
You've seen it here, and if you want to hear the joke, buy the ticket.
Yeah, totally.
I'm your host, and this has been Solo Spotlight. Don't forget to like, subscribe, follow to our channel, and we'll see you next week. Cheers.
Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customized coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh yeah, no, it's the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.